Big
Late Night Gamers Podcast, where we make all of your gaming habits seem acceptable.
Late Night Gamers.
Steve,
this game sucks so bad, it's so unbalanced, blah, and then I just quit, never play it ever again.
Carlson,
what do you do in your free time? Sit around knitting? Screw that shit, I'm gonna cut up a dragon's head.
Tim,
it's okay if your guts spill out and you explode into a bloody mess, as long as you don't take your clothes off.
Gamers.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to episode 20 of Late Night Gamers Podcast. I'm Nick Perzanowski, and with me this week and every week is Tim Madden.
Domo arigato, Mr. Roboto.
Steve Morgan. And Charles Caldwell.
What the hell was that?
Hello.
What's going on, guys?
Driving like a maniac and enjoying it.
Driving?
Like a maniac.
That would be awful if you were actually recording the podcast while driving.
That would be terrible.
You keep me lively. The moon was out tonight. You know how I feel about the moon.
Yeah.
Look at the moon.
This is the kid that at college would like finish a final and be like, I don't want to wait until tomorrow to go home, drive 6 hours to New Hampshire. I'm going to drive 6 hours at 12:30 a.m.
Yeah, dude.
Fact.
Crazy.
Hanging out on the road with the truck.
Freaking I guess up. It depends on your bedtime, though. Since I go to bed at like 3 or 4, that wouldn't be a problem for me.
Yeah, that doesn't work for my life, that's for sure.
The best part about it was the halfway point in Malone where you get to stop at Walmart and see all the people that are hanging around.
Yeah, the 24-hour Walmart that has like I don't want to go to 24-hour Walmarts at like 2 o'clock in the morning. It's just not. I mean, those are not the type of people you want to meet.
Did ever. You guys have to drive through Vermont and then you drive by all those like emergency truck ramps?
Oh yeah,
those things are freaking crazy. Every time I see one of those things, like so, like at the bottom of like steep hills, of these like ramps that like kind of just go up another hill. So if a truck's like brakes fail, they can like drive up this like gravelly hill at the end of like the bottom of the hill, which just like I can't imagine like. You know, like, just the feeling of being a truck driver. It's like, you're driving, it's like late at night, you're on that kind of hill, and then your brakes fail, and then you're like, shit, oh no, you're like, and then you're like, you got so much weight.
I don't think it's going to cut it.
And you just have to drive into this hill.
We are going to die.
Yeah, what I don't understand is if they go up that, then aren't they going to come back down? It's going to keep going on back and forth.
No, then they can put on their e-brake and just boom, they're done.
They should just e-brake it from the beginning. 40,000 pounds recklessly driving down the highway.
You just like wait till you're at the peak of the next hill and then you jump out when you're going like 0 miles an hour.
Yeah. Just make sure it's not a fuel tanker. Kaboom!
It's like the T-1000 in Terminator 2 when he jumps out of that truck. It just does a barrel roll down the... Oh, yeah, damn it. That was a tangent. Anyway. We'll get right into some news this week. One thing that... A third-party Wii U launch developer... discussed its shortcomings to Eurogamer, and this came out in a... I didn't read the whole thing. It was a huge like manifesto thing of everything that was wrong with the Wii U, and I got the...
Oh damn!
I read some just like the bullet points from Kotaku, and one of the huge things was that when they were talking to like the Nintendo people, nobody at Nintendo had ever played anything on PlayStation Network or on Xbox Live.
What the fuck? Well,
if you're gonna have, I mean, granted, like Nintendo is not the best online console, but like if you're gonna be competitive, you should at least know what your competition is.
Yeah, I think that's I think Nintendo kind of, like, exists in its own little bubble, and they try not to, like, let themselves be like influenced by other companies, but that's kind of a, you know, it's a, it hurts them more than it helps them, I think, nowadays.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think, like, I read the article on Kotaku, and it's like, I definitely see what they're saying, but at the same time, I kind of get the impression that, like, Wii U doesn't really care, and that's kind of their model, and that, like, their target audience is, like, simplicity, children, families.
Right.
And, like, things like online games and, like, third-party developers aren't really going to satisfy, like, any of those criteria. I mean, they may. I'm not saying it's impossible for a third-party game to, like, you know, reach, like, old people, but, like, generally, right, those games are going to be for, like, hardcore gamers or, like, new things, cool things. So, I mean, it's definitely silly for them to not, like, try to explore these different things, but at the same time, I don't think that it really matters to them so much, because they're going to fail anyways. Like, yeah. If Wii tries to make an online game that's, like, competitive, unless it's, like, something really unique and really good, I think they know that it's just not going to, like, be successful.
Yeah,
this is not their target audience anymore.
I feel like Nintendo is just trying to get away from, like, basically the does anything that doesn't have the Nintendo brand, like, first-party brand on it. It's becoming its own, like, little, like, cult world.
We would like to play.
And this is what we've kind of said in the past, is, like, basically we think they're going to become just a straight developer.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, this is the same strategy that Apple has, and it works really well for them.
Yeah, that's right. I was just going to say that Nintendo is basically the Apple of the video game world. You know, they don't follow trends. They kind of try to set their own. And I mean, to a great extent, they were really the leaders of video games for years, and they were the first to bring us real, like, motion motion gaming in the living room. And, I mean, it's, you know, it's a decent strategy. It's just, they, from a developer standpoint, it's a lot more frustrating because they don't give them all the tools and, they don't make it as easy for them as like Microsoft or Sony do, because they're so focused on trying to get as many developers as they can, but Nintendo's just kind of like, we're going to do this no matter what. If you don't like it, then we're not going to help you.
Yeah.
Well, it seems like there's a pretty good parallel comparing them to Apple then, because isn't developing for Apple not necessarily the easiest thing? I mean, they've got their own programming language that you have to be strict to, and then you have to go through the Apple Store. So obviously there's not a crossover between the same application for Apple as there would be for the Windows Phone or the Android.
Yeah, it's pretty similar.
And it's the same way. It's like sleekness, like, simplicity, just like, everything's kind of dumbed down. I mean, Apple's, like, not that way, so to speak, but for someone who really, like, wants to be able to, like, modify a lot of things or have, like, you know, extra USB ports and things like that, I mean, it's annoying when you get an iPad that doesn't have it and all these, like, you have to buy all these adapters that are, like, proprietary from, like, Apple. It's the same kind of style Wii does. I mean, it's just frustrating, just as much as, like, Apple's frustrating for someone who, like, wants to do those things for me, Wii is frustrating for, like, a gamer who really wants to play, really good games and really good titles and be able to play them online. I mean, there's definitely a market for people like us to play games like Mario Kart or all these other games online against each other, but they're just not going to, like, it's tough, I think, for them to go that direction.
It's not in their culture.
Sure.
Really.
Yeah. I mean, granted, Nintendo has huge cash reserves, so even if the Wii U isn't a success, I don't think it even really matters all that much.
Sure.
I think they can
they'll just keep selling playing cards and laugh at us all.
They make money no matter what, so
for all we know, they have a secret, they're funding a secret company for Japanese sex toys. Who knows?
It's not a secret company if it's in Japan.
That's right.
Number one.
Anyway. The second piece of news from this past week that seemed like a pretty big thing that should have happened a while ago. SimCity finally got an offline mode after their 10th update. And I think it launched like 10 months ago or something like that. And this was something that people wanted to come with it in the first place, and it took them close to a year to release in offline mode.
What a shitstorm this game was, man.
Yeah, no joke. It was just, I mean, with the network crashing and people losing information and whatnot in their games. And
it, what sort of mods are they? Are people, like, is it just all fresh? Because, I mean, if it hasn't supported mods in the past, there's obviously nothing that people have done. But part of this update is gonna, that it's going to support mods.
Yeah, I have no idea. I didn't see any examples of mods. It just mentioned that it that they'll be supporting them.
Interesting. I wonder what sort of stuff will come out of it. One of the interesting things that I heard about recently was a guy who was a developer for what's the name of the developer that does SimCity? Is it Maxis? What the heck are they called?
I guess Maxis.
Maxis. He was a developer of Maxis, and for a long time, but he kind of got fed up with the AI in SimCity, where you'll be constructing your city, and somebody will be living in like one side of the city, and will drive all the way to work on the other side of the city, and not necessarily take advantage of all the super highways and stuff you're building. So he took it upon himself to develop a game called Banished, where it's essentially you're banished. Piece of society that's banished, and you're living in the in your woods, and you have to establish, you have to like revitalize society based, but using like nothing but like maybe 10 people and a handful of carts, and then establish a civilization out of it. It seemed pretty cool, and the graphics looked pretty cool themselves. I was told about it by a friend Chris when we went to the Hooks at Arcade, and I dominated. So
excellent.
Yeah. I played a game called Raptor, and I won, like, 2,000 tickets in the first 10 minutes.
The story of Charles's life right here.
I know. I paid $20, and I got $20 worth of Kit Kats, so...
Oh, my God. This is like a made-for-TV movie.
That's too many Kit Kats.
That's one mouthful for Charles.
Yeah, I'm looking at this. I was looking at this game Banished because you posted it in the notes, and it looks really cool. I mean, the graphics look really good, and but I guess it's not out, right?
No, it's coming out. Actually, it's coming out pretty soon. It's coming out February
18th,
like second week of February, yeah. And it's available on Steam if anyone wants to take a look at it. But
oh, okay.
It's just this one guy who's one guy is the developing the whole thing.
Oh shit! So. It's always a dangerous game.
Yeah.
Yikes.
But, I mean, it's not like he's an unknown developer. He's been developing with Maxis in the past, so he's kind of got to weigh that against the dangers of untested programmers.
I think typically when, like, one person develops a game, like, it usually is really unique and really, like, interesting, but I think it just, the only thing that stinks about one person developing a game is... like updates can be issue and like you know fixes, but I think the big thing is just like content. Like once it's out, I mean, it might take him like 2 years for him to actually add something to the game, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Which is like kind of frustrating. So
according to what I was hearing about it is that this game is going to require several playthroughs to get through all the complexity of it. I was looking at it, and I mean, aside from the AI model where there's some more intuitiveness to the where they go and how they interact with each other. The game has so many layers of complexity that the first time you play it, it'll just be like you'll be making shacks and you'll have like a very simplistic city, but then you'll get to the point where you can have way more, which is, I mean, that's probably somewhat true with SimCity itself, but...
Sounds cool.
Yeah.
We'll have to check that out once it's actually live.
Chris is a newly come member to the Late Night Gamer Corps. So.
Wait, Chris who?
Leary, friend from...
Oh, good. Good. Welcome to Christopher Leary.
Yeah. Not this, but not the podcast, but the Late Night Gamer Corps.
Well, he should listen to the podcast, too.
Late Night Gamer.
God damn it, Chris.
More releases this week, or not releases, but another thing announced that sounds like the best DLC that's ever come to a first-person shooter is Call of Duty Ghosts. Is you'll be able to download the ability to play as Michael Myers, and you basically just chase people like through a level with an axe. It sounds awesome.
Is that a, like a single player or is it multiplayer? So you can play a multiplayer and just like instead of a knife you have instead of the like the stabbing knife you just have the Michael Myers knife.
Yeah, you
yeah, like a machete.
Yeah, it's a multiplayer map and I think one person is Michael Myers and he fucks you up and it's like you're in like a really it's in like a dark neighborhood or a someplace dark or something. So it's
one Michael Myers and 10 Jamie Lee Curtis.
It's like a campsite. It's called the map's called Fog, and you just like go through the woods and like abandon like campsites and cabins and just like murder people.
Yeah. It sounds fantastic.
Where's the mod for? Okay, now we need the mod for Jason. We need the mod for Freddy Krueger. Chucky. Chucky, we definitely need.
Oh my god. Chucky playing as Chucky would be like Oddjob in Goldeneye. It would be like running around with a knife and you when you kill somebody, you'd have like some quirky little saying. Like wow, what's a good Chucky saying? Oh, like from the Bride of Chucky. I'm all rubber, baby. Oh my God. The movie was so bad.
Look at me. I'm all rubber.
Speaking of horror, another thing that they just kind of leaked this week is that PlayStation Plus, the free game for PlayStation 4 in February, is Outlast, which I'm pumped about. So, can't wait to play that.
Q.
Yep.
What's this game about? Have we talked?
This is the one that was at. This was the one at PAX. That's the one.
The one where you're using a flashlight to wander.
You have a video camera, and you're looking through the lens of the video camera to see stuff, and then you run away from shit. You have no weapons. You have to hide under beds and like get through doors in time to get away from these things and stuff.
This is the game where like you can't do anything but just run from shit.
Yeah.
Sounds disturbing.
Yeah. It's scary.
You gonna die!
Yeah, it scared the crap out of me at PAX, so.
I think I remember seeing it at PAX now.
I'm excited to see it on. It's already out on PC, but it's coming to PlayStation 4 too, so I'm excited to play that. Speaking of new games or games that are not out yet, you guys played, well, one or all of you played Dawngate and Elder Scrolls Online betas, right?
I played Dawngate moderately. I played about 20 games to get a feel for what the game was like, and kind of what my consensus was on all the games that I played is that it was somewhat interesting. I mean, it was 2-lane rather than 3-lane. It's EA's take on the MOBA genre. It's ported out of Origins, so it's kind of a weird context of how to play the game and get up into games, as well as once you get into the games, it was not necessarily based on your abilities, but based on this weird system of items and kind of combinations of items that would make better items. It was very strange, and I think the main thing I got out of all the games that I played was that it's not necessarily a difficult game. I mean, you could jump right into it and do pretty well, but if you make a mistake, then the game just bites you in the ass and you're pretty much screwed. I mean, the turnaround on the game requires that somebody is definitely going to be jungling, and unless you're really good at jungling, which is, I mean, going around in the unexplored regions of the map that aren't necessarily part of the lanes, you're going to be screwed. I actually am a terrible jungler, which is I realized when I was playing is like I'm at least in that game because I would run around in the woods and I'd be attacking just like random NPC characters that you kill to get experience, but they just dominate you and there's really no way for you to get experience other than running out into lanes when you're doing that. So out of the 20 games I played, I probably won maybe a little over half, and awful at melee characters. Ranged characters are really overpowered, and except for some people who play melee characters and just dominate me, so I guess I'm just terrible. I'm just terrible with it.
That crypt, there's one guy that's like he's like a tomb, like a crypt. He's just a giant like walking cemetery, and he just destroys.
Yeah.
That sounds a walking cemetery? That sounds
It's like a walking cemetery. In his head, he has like a little door in front and this little floaty skull in the middle.
A little floaty skull.
He does this annoying move where he just slaps his hands like... is he
the head from Pee-wee Herman's Playhouse?
Pretty much, yeah.
The one that frustrated me the one most was this character called Volok, which is this a paladin, a corrupt paladin, essentially. And I mean, when I was playing him, I was awful, so I really can't context. But his ultimate move was basically just a lifesteal. So if you get anywhere near him and you're with a group of members trying to gank this guy, he just pumps that out, and you're just screwed because all of you lose all your life. And then he's just like, bam, bam, bam. So it was somewhat frustrating, but
yes.
I mean, it was fun, but it wasn't exactly memorable.
I was watching the developers talk about it on Twitch, and it kind of piqued my interest because it's kind of like a slight mutation on your standard MOBA, and I think that's in the grand scheme of things, I think that's probably a good thing, since almost every MOBA now is the exact, you know, it's three lanes, it's the exact same idea, creeps, you know, everything is exactly the same, so. To see them kind of try something new was, I think, a breath of fresh air. But it's not this huge departure from your standard thing. I think if you can play any of the other ones, you can probably get into Dawn Gate. But you know, I just like to see them take it further and try something new.
Yeah, I think the biggest difference would be the items, because there was really no items like the other games. It was more like attribute abilities that you could buy, and then those upgraded into different things. But there was no like, you buy a sword, you get a better sword, you get a shield, you get a better shield. Nothing like that. So that was interesting.
What about Elder Scrolls?
I got into the beta for Elder Scrolls this past weekend. And this would be the second Elder Scrolls beta I got into, and I started playing in one of the other races, and I gotta say, playing it the second time, it was way smoother as opposed to the first time we tried logging in, where it was get in, but some of the stuff that I don't know whether some of the reviews we've read about the demand for this kind of game, or whether it's my own personal conception of it, but it just didn't have the same appeal that it did the first time. I really don't like when you're playing it, is when you're seeing all these people running around and you're trying to... I just don't like the MMO genre juxtaposed against the Elder Scrolls games, where it's an open wide world and you're supposed to be this very powerful character, but there's a million of you running around, so who the hell cares, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I got invited, but I just was so underwhelmed the last time I played it, I didn't even bother playing it this time.
I mean, are any of you actually planning on getting Elder Scrolls? I mean, it's coming out for consoles and PC, but I don't know if I can do the $15 sub.
Well, plus it's not linked, so it's like, why, you
know, right?
Why bother?
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm probably not going to get it.
No, I'm not going to. Until it becomes free to play.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get to play this week either because I was gone, unfortunately. But I kind of feel like what Tim said. I'm just kind of like, it was okay. And the only way I would buy an MMO now, like day one, is if it was like amazing and I really, really liked it. And that's actually pretty difficult to satisfy now. But
The only thing I'm frustrated about by it is I really love the Elder Scrolls, so I'm kind of frustrated at the fact that the only way to like get engrossed in that world right now is to get into the MMO, which sucks. I mean, why can't they come out with a single player? And why couldn't they have devoted all that $220 million into coming up with a single player game that would have included all of this stuff? That would be way better than an MMO.
Well, I think it has a lot of potential, and I think the one thing that will make it really good will be like PvP and player groups and stuff like that, because I think I always thought that would have been an awesome part of Skyrim or any Elder Scrolls game, if you could like have a bunch of people and have like big battles and stuff like that. So, I mean, if they do that right, I think it could be a lot of fun. But
you think they could have taken a page out of maybe, like, Dark Souls book and have instances where you can do that even in the single-player game? You know? I don't know. Yeah. I just don't like the whole point where you're playing in one giant world and then everyone can be there all the time when you're trying to run around and do the same quest. It's always been a problem of mine with MMOs, too. Like, when everyone's going to the same quest, and obviously the quest is completed a million times, it's like, what the hell's the point?
Yeah, I think that's just a general MMO problem. Something that, like the, you know, the newest gen games like EverQuest Next are trying to solve.
Yeah, well, they did a bad job of that in this game, I think, with, like, making things, you know, cross. It was just really confusing when, like, there was a lot of people trying to do the same quest, like, whether or not you were completing it, and, like, what it meant, like, how do you share items. I think a lot of games have just simplified it by, like, instance. Like, they didn't really instance a lot of things, which was really frustrating. You know, you'd go into, like, a dungeon that was, like, 10 feet long, and it'd just be completely wiped because there was 30 people in it. So, it didn't make any sense. So, I mean... But yeah, I mean, that stuff will come out. But if you think about, like, what it is, I mean, it is a single-player game, essentially, like, story-wise, right? That they just made it so that everyone can play in and made it larger and, you know, had spawns and quests that were more general. I mean, it's basically Skyrim online.
Yeah.
So...
with everything good and everything bad that means.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
It's... like, if I had to complain about one thing, it would be that they... you know, they took Skyrim, they took this dark, epic world, and then they kind of, like, they kind of tried to play, play out of World of Warcraft's playbook and kind of cartoonize it a little bit and make it a little less gritty, and I think that just sets it back, because that's not what Elder Scrolls is about at all.
Right.
And it, you know, it, I mean, I guess I understand, because it's such an epic, this huge world, and you have to make it so that you can play it online. So you have to, in the process, you kind of, like, dumb down textures and stuff like that, but, you know, it just didn't have the same epic feel that Skyrim had.
I just hope the Elder Scrolls food cart is back at, back at PAX this year.
We need our collector's edition cups.
Our collector's edition plastic cups.
They're dishwasher safe.
I had that for like a couple of years. Oh, I guess 1 year.
It was good food. It was free too. So we've been talking about all these betas that you guys have been playing, and one other kind of, I guess, aspect of early gaming is something that is called early access, which, at least, let me understand if I'm understanding correctly, because I don't play a lot of PC games, but early access is basically you pay for the game even when it's not ready to come out.
Yeah.
Basically paying for beta access.
Okay, that's okay.
A lot of the times it's when a developer just needs some infusion of cash, and they've been, like, it's a lot of the ones on Steam, it's like a small developer or, like, three people that just need, they've been working on it for a long time, and all of a sudden they're like, hey, can we sell this for, like, $20 so we can get some cash coming in?
I think the biggest, I mean, as far as I know, the biggest, like, earliest example of this that I can remember is Minecraft. Is that what, you paid, like, $20 when it, or actually, I think it might have been cheaper than that, but this, it was still, like, alpha.
Yeah, it was pretty cheap,
Yeah, you could pay to start playing it. And then it went up, so, like, if you waited longer, it went to, like, beta, and then it went up to, like, $20 or something. But, I mean, as far back as I can remember, that was the first time I saw it on, like, a really big scale.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I think some developers start to realize that, like, okay, well, we can release this game for beta, but, like, as an added bonus for people that are, like, donating to us, we can, like, allow them to have access to the game. And then it kind of stems into something, well... you know, instead of, like, asking people to donate and we'll give them access, we'll just say, you can buy it now, and if you buy it now, you can play it early. And so that's pretty much, like, how it goes that way. I have, like, a lot of opinions on this, and I have a lot of thoughts, but my biggest thing is it's nice in some ways in games that you really want to try out. So, for example, like, Starbound, I bought that game just to play early access, and I knew it was going to be bad, or not finished, and it wasn't finished, but it was still interesting, and I was okay with that. But there's just a lot of games now that, you know, you see them out, and you can play them, and it just kind of, like, takes away from the... I think in some cases it's really bad for it, because I think it takes away from the game's polishness and the game's, like, overall... your overall opinion of the game, because it's kind of like, for example, like, if... when the new Harry Potter was going to come out, they, like, released the draft, the first draft, and if you bought the book early, you get the first draft. Like, nobody wants the first draft of a book. Like, we want the real book. Like.
Right. Yeah.
And so...
especially for a single-player game, it's like... imagine if you'd played Ocarina of Time when they were still, like, coming up with concepts for some of the dungeons. It's like, it's just bullshit. I mean, you're playing through the game and it sucks.
Yeah.
And if you get to a point where there's tons of glitches, you're like, well, I guess I'm not going to play this right now, and then you may forget about it.
Yeah, I mean, that you know, that's a big part of it. You know, the fact that the game kind of loses that that new game luster when you play it in beta and it sucks. And I think you know, it kind of turns a lot of people off, because they'll never go back and play it after that. But
right.
I mean, it's I think the same thing would have happened if it got released at the normal time. You know, you still would have had a lot of people who bought it and never really played it. You know, at least now they find out earlier that it sucks.
Sure. I think this happens a lot. I know this happens a lot in MMOs, right? You get a game, and I almost like... and this is kind of why I was saying I probably wouldn't buy Elder Scrolls, is I'm almost against buying MMOs on release now, because it's just not... it's almost inevitable that there's going to be some problems and something not good about the game or something unreleased. It's just so much content in a game, and there's so many aspects to it to make it actually successful. To try to compete with something like World of Warcraft that's been going for like 10 plus years, it's really difficult to get on that level. And, you know, you're always like, oh, this game doesn't have PvP in it, or this game doesn't have this aspect, and then you quit, and then when they come out with the update, I mean, the game's dead, no one's playing, and you don't want to play it again, because it sucked the last time you played it.
Yeah.
This is exactly what happened with me in, like, the Old Republic. I mean, I loved the game, I got to end the game, and the endgame content was bad, and I just said, okay, I'm done with it, and then never ever went back, even though they're still coming out with updates. So...
Yeah.
I think first, I mean... I see some benefits for the whole concept of early access. I mean, for a lot of games, for a lot of multiplayer games, it makes a lot of sense to stress test things. Like, I mean, though we're not talking about playing Elder Scrolls, that we're not talking about not playing because they stress tested it and it seemed kind of clunky. We're talking about it because we don't really see the viability of the game. I mean, we don't see the viability of the plot, we don't see the viability of kind of the design of it, but it's not necessarily like the bugs that are associated to it. So for MMOs and other multiplayer games, they're kind of required to offer a beta, but I mean, for those games, they know that, and so they offer it for free. So these guys who are talking about, I mean, getting paid for offering free access to something early, it's weird.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is rooted kind of in the like things like Kickstarter. There were a lot of places where people, you know, wanted to build the capital to fully distribute the game and make it better, and they couldn't do that. I mean, they were either at the you know, they didn't have any to begin with, or they had gotten to like a breaking point. So I mean, I understand that as like a model, because they need to do that, otherwise the game's gonna die. But you know, there's definitely drawbacks, and it's not a, you know, I think a lot of people are like, oh yeah, the game, I can finally play the game, you know, I'll finally get in and figure it out. But you know, there's a lot of like unforeseen consequences that come with that.
A great example of a game that seems like it's been on beta or some connotation of it is Planetary Annihilation, which has been on Steam for a long time. It's this game where you can play in space. And the whole concept behind it, and the videos that they show, is you're destroying other planets with asteroids, and just kind of an RTS, but the game was on early access like a year ago for $100, and it's still in early access now for $60.
Lord.
And it's just super expensive for... it's early access. I mean, the game's not done, so why would I buy this game that I don't know how it plays if it's $60? It just seems ridiculous to me.
Yeah, that is ridiculous.
Though it looks amazing. I mean, if it actually does everything that it says it's going to do. Though, in my mind, it looks very similar to how they advertise Spore, and we all know how I felt about Spore when it came out, which seemed like such a disappointment.
Yeah. I think that's there's another aspect to it also is a lot of these games have been like indie games or smaller developers, and they've mostly been at like a lower price point where you get like Minecraft's like $20, Starbound, I think it's Starbound's like 20 or it was 15 if you did it early. But as we see like $60 games, that's a big investment to like put down early. So I mean, you know, I guess another example is Destiny, and I guess that you know, the fact that it's on consoles is also a pretty big factor. But you know, it's a big, you know, it's a pre-order game, and put that money down is a big investment. And you know, it's, I guess it could be a good thing or a bad thing to play the game early. I don't know.
Are they offering early access on that game?
Yeah, if you pre-order it.
Yeah, I think isn't the beta coming up soon? Or is it July?
I think they said early 2014, I think.
Okay, so
yeah, that's kind of a risky gamble. It seems kind of counterintuitive for the gamer to want to buy something when you're only going to be playing in beta. I mean, if you find that it's really shitty and you don't like it, then they're going to get a biased sample, because obviously people who are playing it are going to be like, I love this game because I paid $60 for it. I'm going to get my money's worth. Like,
yeah, it's kind of it's weird. I don't think we've seen all the effects that will come out of this. You know, I think there's going to be not as much like uproar and excitement when games reach their actual release. It's going to be, you know, the early access is going to be the new release day for games. It's gonna kind of change the way we think about games when they come out and stuff like that. But it's not ubiquitous enough yet for it to really have an effect on.
I feel like
that's what it's getting there.
I feel like they're going to have to change the model of early access if they want it to continue this way, though, because there are only enough people out there that will pay $100 for a game that's not finished, you know.
Yeah.
And like after that first time, and they're like, "Oh shit, I paid $100 and this game sucks ass, and it's like it's really bad, and it's not even going to be finished for another year and a half." They, you know, they're going to have to do it. It's going to have to be like, you know, a small chunk of it, and then once the game actually releases and the full game is finished, then people can pay to, you know, pay the rest of the amount to play the full game, or to play the, you know, the game when it's completely finished.
Yeah. And it's like frustrating because like for example on Steam right now there's about 16 highlighted games on the storefront page, and I think 7 of them are early access games. It's like, I mean, they look really cool, but, like, what's the point? And it's just like a tease.
Right.
So I'm not going to buy a game if it's not even out. I mean, if they had a demo or some kind of trial, then maybe I might buy it. But, like, I'm not going to just, like, invest $20 in, like, a car with no wheels. It doesn't make any sense.
I mean, if the early access was cheaper, that would make sense. But
sure.
If it, like, staggered, if it jumped up once it was finally released, that would be a... You know, I think that would be that as a business model would make sense, but
yeah, I mean, they could.
Yeah, whatever happened to people playing, getting paid to stress test your games? Come on, guys.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no. But like, you know, I mean, that's a good point. Actually, they could do this, right, where they could say, you know, if you buy it by the end of this month, it's $20. If you buy it by the end of this year, it's $30 or something. You know, or like,
right.
Then you feel like you're making an investment, which is like okay.
Yeah.
But if it's just like, I don't even know if it's going to go up, or if it's going to go up at some time, and I don't know, then like, I'm almost like inclined to be like, okay, it's $20 now, and if it's going to be $30 when it comes out, I'm almost inclined to say, it's fine, I'll spend an extra $10 to get a game that I know is actually like good, and not just give away my money early, but it depends, I guess, right? And I think that's a good point. If they had that model where they were really explicit, like, if you buy it now, if you buy it within the next, like, X amount of months, it's like, the price jumps, so you can kind of be like, okay, I need to buy it now for this reason.
Right.
I think some of that uncertainty is probably what drives a lot of people to buy it in the first place, not knowing whether or not it's going to go up.
It's true.
they're probably, you know, just by, just in case. But I think another big factor to it is like developer, like, you know, developer fanboys. They're not fanboys, but people who like certain developers, like, you know, I don't know anyone who doesn't like Bungie, man. They're just an amazing developer that has you know, slam dunked every game they've had since Halo. I mean, I guess all they really had is Halo so far, but you know, so I would totally give them $60 and feel pretty confident that Destiny is going to turn out good because they just have a good track record.
Right.
So I think to do it for the developer makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, as a way of supporting them.
People who have some sort of historical value to base it off of, but...
Yeah. It's harder to justify if it's like someone, an unknown that you've never heard of before.
Right. Well, I guess we'll go on to some listener questions. The first one, I think we kind of covered last week. Fiction315 asked, are you excited for PlayStation Now? And what do you think a good price is for the service? What games would you like to see on it? I'm the only person here with a PlayStation 4. Well, Steve, you have a PlayStation 3, but...
Yeah.
I'm excited for PlayStation Now. I think it's a great... I've always said that there should be a digital rental service. I think a good price would be, you know, $10 to $15 a month for like a sub price, and then a per day, you know, per diem price if people just want to rent them, just to be on par with Netflix. And I mean, even, you know, what's that other one? Gamefly. Yeah, because I mean, they're a disc based game, and if they could, you know, if they could charge $15 a month rather than their whatever $9 or something, what it is? No, it's, I think theirs is like 12. Never mind.
Yeah,
it's
something around.
So I'd say probably $15 to $20, if depending on the number of rentals you want and stuff.
I can say I'm honestly more likely to get a PlayStation 4 if that PlayStation Now thing is successful, because I really want to play some of the games that I haven't been able to play backwards compatibility, like. Like, after Final Fantasy IX, I want to play Final Fantasy X. I want to play all those games.
Yeah.
I don't have the capability, so...
And if it's a rental service, too, then you don't have... I mean, then you're not paying, like, the full price for a game that you might not want to keep. And it's just like, okay, yeah. Sweet, I can... If you want to subscribe for a couple months and just be like, all right, I want to catch up on this, you know, PlayStation backlog and do that. I think that's great. I think there's going to be a lot of people that will do that, especially when some of these other, you know, sequels are coming out, and the first system that someone owns is a PlayStation 4, like Infamous Second Son. They're going to be like, oh well, you know, what's the story behind Infamous 1 and 2, and the next Uncharted game, what's the backstory there? What's, you know, what happened in the first three Killzone games? Not that I really think that the backstory there makes any difference, but
I'm actually interested to see, is there any similar concept for like Gamefly or PlayStation Now for PC? Because I mean, it seems to me like there is not, like, there's no rental service for PC games.
Well, there was the I forget what the name of the company was that Sony bought, but they were, that's originally what they were doing.
Oh, so now they're just not doing
Gaikai
that at all.
Yeah,
Gaikai, and there was another one. I forget what it was called.
Yeah,
I think it's still around. But Gaikai, and the idea was to stream it to anything. So you could stream it to PC, you could stream it to your phone, you could stream it to anything.
But this is gonna be huge in the future too, because all the upcoming Sony Bravia televisions are gonna come pre-installed with PlayStation. Like the 2014 versions are gonna come pre-installed with PlayStation Now, so you could potentially play. Stream games directly to your television with nothing but a PlayStation 3 controller, and that's all. And that's all you would need, and then just a subscription
and
to the games.
Obviously, internet connection.
right. But I mean, that's a given. Yeah. So I think
dial up.
I mean, I don't know. I still have my doubts about how responsive it's going to be. I think it's, you know, I hope they can do it well. They're going to have like, lots of servers, and if you don't live, like, within, like, you know, 50 miles of a major city, I feel like it's going to be really, it's not going to work well, unless you play it, like, wicked low resolutions, you know?
Right.
I don't know, though. I'm a pessimist about it.
Well,
we need fiber.
We'll have to see. I mean, I think when it comes out, hopefully I can get into the beta whenever that. I think that's like either end of this month or next month.
Yeah, that'd be sick.
Because I'd really like to
send them a message.
See how it works. Yeah, no kidding.
Arrest the shit out of them.
So, the next question comes from another one of our undying listeners. That Choffy.
The undying.
The undead. he said, what video game music brings a nostalgic smile to your faces? That's quite a bit.
Ocarina of Time, dude. I will listen to that every day. I'll listen to the soundtrack for that every day.
The Fire Temple?
Gerudo Valley. That's what it is.
Just turns into, like, what's your favorite Ocarina of Time song, basically, is what you're asking.
I like Final Fantasy songs.
There's, I could listen to, well, honestly, like, I've played, I mean, if, have you listened to the orchestral, I forget what it's called, but it's, like, the best video game music, and it's all done by, like, the London Philharmonic or something, and
I think I've heard that.
It's wicked good. Tetris sounds amazing. With Mario sounds good. I mean, there's a lot of games that have great music in them, but I like the Uncharted music, like the Uncharted theme. There's a lot of good it kind of pumped
them all about.
Yep.
I'm all about the Forest Temple, man. That's my jam.
I like the Fire Temple the best.
I think we all need to go to one of these. We all need to go to one of these shows. But actually,
yeah, actually, there's an orchestra that does just like the Zelda themes, the Zelda songs.
That's sweet.
And I was trying to get tickets to like go and like bring my brother, but they were really expensive. Like the cheapest tickets, if you bought them like a month and a half early, were like $40 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, shit. And then everyone was like, nah. Everyone was like, man, that's not bad. I'd pay like $80. I'm like, dude, you're crazy. I ain't paying that kind of money.
Yeah.
Zelda music? I mean, come on, it's good. But
another quality music is, who amongst us does not love the Sephiroth song from Final Fantasy VII? Of course, that's like listed on every Final Fantasy VII Final Fantasy favorite.
Well, we need to get into our top five, I guess, because we got about 10 minutes left.
No!
15 minutes left, probably. Our top five this week, after our topic this week, is the top five worst game launches, or the top five games that would have benefited from early access. Who wants to take number one?
I will, since I'm the only one who I think played it. I've talked about this in the past, but World War Z had an awful launch.
Didn't get changed to
Daisy.
The name got changed to
Infested World Survivor Z. Stories. Yeah.
Yeah.
But at the time, it was called World War Z.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
And it was launched as a like an alpha with cascading levels of payment. I mean, you pay a specific level, and you get like a dedicated server when they come out with that. You get some gold, in-game gold, and the cost is lower than if you buy the game later. But ultimately, what it came down to is that they released the game, and it was like stick figure models, and nothing was put in. Like gravity was screwed up. Like you could climb up trees and all this stuff. Which I mean, some of that do you expect with like an alpha, or I think it was actually the beta at one point, but the game was just awful, and there's no corrections to anything. And then at one point, They finally got it on Steam, and they were bragging about it, and they had the stuff advertised on Steam, and immediately people were like, none of the stuff that you're advertising is in the game right now. Like, you can't make a car out of anything you find. You can't go into buildings. I mean, there's buildings everywhere, and you can only go into, like, three. So it got taken off of Steam and then put back on with, like, strict criteria on what they could and could not say about the game. Ultimately now, and the game was plagued by pirates. They didn't come up with a good way to ban, like, hackers to playing the game. And then finally, once they did, they brought in Punkbuster. Everyone had evacuated from the game. So it just was a complete failure. I think the developer for DayZ actually had to come out and apologize for the game, even though he wasn't involved, because people were started like asking him, "What's going on with this game? Like, why are you screwing us over?" And he's like,
"I heard about that.
This isn't my game. I'm sorry for this game." But, and the lead developer like left, and they were getting so much money for all these players playing it, and then they kind of just cashed out and bailed. Essentially what they did. So it's the new area of scammers is early release games. It's like,
yeah. Number 2. Call of Duty Ghosts. Oh.
And this, Battlefield 4.
And this is like this is like games that would have benefited from early access in the consumer's mind. Games that would not have benefited from early access in the developer's mind. Right.
I don't think anything could have benefited these games. We couldn't have. This is not done. They're post-mortem on launch.
Battlefield 4 is so terrible. It's still terrible. They just patched it, and I still can't get into, like, I still can't get into games, and I still can't, like, play, or halfway through a game, it'll just, like, you know, log me out and disconnect, and it's garbage.
You know, and I'm sure they did tons of testing, but I don't know what they did. They just like pissed it all away. They didn't do any fixes. I mean, they must.
Well, they obviously didn't do the level of testing that it requires to crash a game like in an MMO. I mean, there was so many people trying to sign on to Elder Scrolls that they had to like. I mean, there's no better way to stress test a game by having like 100,000 people trying to play it. So
yeah. So yeah, I think we've beaten these FPS horses to death, but.
They're our go-to trash.
Yep. Number 3.
Skyrim.
Yeah, I think Skyrim, like, it was, I mean, it was buggy, but what Elder Scrolls game hasn't been buggy? It would have been a first if it wasn't.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, the world is so huge, and there's so many NPCs, and there's so many, like, There's always going to be that chance somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, and I think fell through the world.
I think the bugginess of Elder Scrolls games is kind of like their part of the charm, you know, because you always have something ridiculous, like some insane physics thing, like you just whack a dude and he launches halfway across the map, and then it, you know, you laugh, and that's like part, you know, that's part of like what makes life a game. I don't know, that might sound kind of weird, but.
I enjoy it.
The only thing about the game that I was kind of frustrated by is, like, the component of the game that crashes it. I don't know what piece of it the game is, but that just, like, every now and then when I'm playing the game, it will just crash. And it's not something with my settings, because I've checked it, and I've looked it up other people who this has happened to, and it's just kind of part of the game. And that's not, like, some weird quirk that is enjoyable. It's like I'm trying to play, and then all of a sudden it'll be like, burr, burr, burr.
Does it make that sound?
Burned into my eardrums.
Number 4.
I never played this.
Yeah, same here. So,
well,
you didn't play it?
Assassin's Creed 3.
Charles.
Go, Charles.
Nick and I played it.
Yeah.
They could have just had people, like, playing. Did they actually have people playing it, or was it just a video at PAX when we went there?
It was just a video.
Because if they had people playing it, they would have realized immediately that there's something deeply wrong with this game. they varied on so much from the previous Assassin's Creed games that, I mean, they acted like you're an idiot Like, you hadn't played the game before. You couldn't figure out how to play the game. Like, it was the first time you had picked up a controller, and you're going through the world. Besides that, the plots are, I mean, obviously,
convoluted.
I guess I debated it. No, it wasn't necessarily convoluted. It was just lame. It was just so freaking stupid. Uh-huh. There's no point to it, so I don't know whether you can really get that out of a beta, but somebody who was playing that game should have stress-tested it. Not stress-tested it, but like thought about the concept for the game other than the mechanics behind it, because it was just a failure.
Yep. Someone should have been like, hey, can I just make a note that this game is terrible, so maybe you should change everything about it.
Except the pirate ships. Somebody did a really good job with that. Like, they were probably playing the game and they're like, oh man, the rest of this sucks. We should just play the ships a lot.
If you like pirate ships, skip Assassin's Creed 3 and just play Assassin's Creed 4.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
That's why they made the whole game Assassin's Creed 4 based on pirate ships, because
that was the only thing
was
people
the
liked about
the
story. Okay. Number 5.
Alright, I can do this one. We have too many MMOs, and I actually looked up some MMOs to kind of refresh my memory, but some of the ones that I played that are on this list are Vanguard.
Oh, yeah, I want to talk about Vanguard.
Yeah, that game was
That one was really bad, because they, like, when it first came out, one of the big things, there were, like, invisible walls, like, just random things you couldn't pass. And then at one point, I think they, like, fired all the developers. Like, the first few months of the game came out. All this crazy stuff. Like, I mean, the game was fun, but it just was like, this is not done at all. There were, like, classes that were, you could, like, select, but you couldn't play them. And there was, like, all this stuff. But it was just really not finished.
There were some, like, insanely hard gameplay, like, aspects, too. Like, you would, like, if you died, you had to, like, go to your body to get your stuff, and if you, like, died in a pit, you just were done for, like, ever, because you couldn't get your shit, because you couldn't get in there, like, and, yeah, so that was bad. The other game, I think, might have been the worst MMO I've ever played launch. It's me and Brandon bought this game called All Points Bulletin, and I think I've talked about it on the show before, but it's, like, a GTA MMO, and it was horrendously bad. Like, it was, like, if it was a beta, I think I would have been disappointed. Like, if it was an alpha, I probably would have been disappointed. There was, like, 6 guns in the game. You couldn't... The missions weren't even, like... The missions weren't even, you know, like... There was, like, 5 missions, and they just changed where they were, but they were the same. It was horrendously bad. Like, oh, man, that game was really bad. And then the last one I remember, but this one wasn't even... Like, I played this game after it was out for a real long time, and this was City Heroes. Holy crap, that game was one of the worst MMOs I've ever played in my life. Me and Mikey Bean bought that game on, like, Steam sale for, like, $5 on, like, a random weekend. We were just bored out of our mind. And it had been out for, like, 3 or 4 years. And there's literally, that game was so bad that, like, there was 2 quests in the game that you just had to repeat over and over again. Like, go to this house, save some hostage, and you just go, and you just, like, grind through all these guys. And then you'd, like, go out, and then it'd be like, go to this other house, save this hostage. You're like, I just did that. Like, I don't want to do it again.
That game, like, all you... Yeah, I played that game like when it first came out. Me and Alan Henderson played the hell out of it, and it was just as bad when it first came out. Like, even four years later, it had not changed. But there were a lot of bugs with, like, one of the big things in that game were, like, travel modes. You could get, like you could either fly, or you could, like, teleport, or you could run fast, or you could jump high, and some of them would be, like, really buggy, like, you could, like, jump, like, all the way across the map, or you could, like, teleport. It was, you know, people just, like, abused all the bugs in the game for, like, years, because they never fixed them.
I remember, like, we played the game, and we were, like, at, like, I think you need to be, like, level 14 or something to, like, fly or whatever, and we were, like, level, like, 9 or 10, and we're like, you know what, we just, like, we hated the game, but we're just like, we have to get it. And we just grinded it out, and, like, he got flying, and I got, like, teleporting, and like, we got it, and he flew around, and I teleported up in the air, and teleported all over the place, and then I was like, okay, we're done.
What are you gonna actually do with those abilities if you don't need them? I mean,
the worst part about that too is you get flying, but you get like baby mode flying, and you just go like, like, you'll go like wicked slow. Like, it's not even fun once you get it. But you can get like teleporting, like all over the place, and it's like way better.
Sounds about right.
Some other games that I think deserve honorable mentions are the games like Boss Rootin's MMO that he won.
Terra,
and then Rift that they keep throwing copies out at PAX, and they're like,
"Yeah,
take Rift, get it out of here. We don't want it anymore.
Like, no, you can download it from the site. We don't need a CD."
I enjoyed Terra, but Rift, and I enjoyed Rift too when it first came out. But they're just like trying to push it on you now. Like, I'm using mine. I still have my disc from PAX that, you know, it's making a good coaster right now.
The Terra, how is Terra doing now? Kind of just fizzled.
It's free to play.
Yeah. I was like so close to subbing, and then like 2 weeks later, it was like free to play. I was like, oh god. So close to making a big mistake.
Yeah, I think a lot of the MMOs that are coming out now have taken on that kind of mechanic from Terra. So,
yeah, it's funny though, because like when I went free to play, I was like, nope, not playing it. like I was gonna resub. I was like, you know, I was like trying to convince everyone. I was like, let's do it, man. Let's like get back in this game. It's probably better now. Let's do it. And like I was like, I had like the credit card thing open, and then like I was like, you know what? Like, wait, hold on. I'll like probably wait till the end of this week. You know, I probably shouldn't play this game. And then it's like, this game's going to free to play. I was like, oh, I guess that solves it. I'm definitely not playing the game now. So, sad.
Cool. All
right. Well, that brings us to the part of the podcast where we talk about what we've been playing recently, or this week. Steve, what you been playing?
I've just been playing Dota, and I was gone all weekend, so I didn't really get to play anything else. I haven't really played that much of anything lately. It's kind of sad. Really. But there's like a lot of these games on the Steam store that I really want, but like I said, they're all early access, and I want to pay for them.
Yeah.
There's a couple cool games. This game Rust, it looks like Minecraft, but it's like realistic, and you have to.
Oh yeah, that game does look cool.
I've heard a lot of crazy stories where you can like capture people, and there was some like long story. A guy captured a dude and like fed him animals and
this is the top comment right now on Steam. It says, "I love this game. I built a house around a guy's house and made him my prisoner. I fed him cans of tuna and cooked chicken when it was available. And sometimes I would drop spare logs of wood in when they were available. The best part is he talks to me. He keeps telling me his clan's gonna come raid my structure and save him. As I simply respond, it puts the lotion on his skin or else it gets the hose again. And by hose, I mean I dump charcoal on him. This game is great. I hope the servers come back up soon. I think my pet needs to eat."
What game did you say that was?
It's called Rust.
That's fucking funny.
It's such like a good, that, like,
that comment alone is probably all the marketing they need.
Yep. It's gonna be that whole comment is gonna be on the front of the box.
It's like 68. It's like 6,800 out of 7,250 people found this review helpful. 94%.
Tim, what have you been playing?
I haven't been playing much video games lately. I've been playing a lot of MTGO or basically like Magic Online, just drafting and stuff like that. But I did just today. I got an invite to Hearthstone.
Sweet.
I haven't played it yet, so I'm excited to play that at last.
Excellent. Charles, what about you?
I was playing the crap out of Dawn Gate, and I played a little bit of the Elder Scrolls Online beta, and then I've been trying to get back into playing Dota again. Played with Steve last night. And I suck at the friggin' horn guy. God, it's awful.
Magnus! Charles usually goes, "I don't understand this guy," and then I tell him how to play him if the game's over.
Yeah. I also don't understand how Spectre works, but that's a different matter.
Well, I've been playing.
I'm just gonna throw out a bunch after. I'm just gonna throw out a bunch of names.
There you go.
I'm gonna throw out names that aren't even in the game.
Dazzle.
Twinkie Toes.
Ralph Nader. I've been playing
Bob Dolio.
Need for Speed Rivals. I'm like two trophies away from the platinum on that. That's like way too much time spent racing.
Yeah, I bet.
But it's a good game. It's fun. I'm also playing. Well, I downloaded Don't Starve, which was the PS4 free.
PlayStation. Yeah, that's a game I bought early access of. That's another game I bought early access of. But they gave you a demo on PC.
Oh, okay.
So I played the demo. Like, the worst thing is a demo for like 5 minutes, and it's like kind of like Minecrafty, right?
Yeah.
So you like play it for 5 minutes, and like you get a little farther, and you play it again, and you get a little farther, and you're just like, all right, I gotta buy this game. Like, I can't handle this.
Yeah, it's one of the. I didn't know what I was doing at first, and I was like, oh damn, when you die for good.
Yeah.
Shit.
Start over.
But yeah, then I've been playing Killzone Mercenary on Vita, and I'm just about done with that. And I also just bought, it was a wicked good sale on PlayStation Vita and PlayStation 3 games on the PlayStation Store right now. I got Sly Cooper Thieves in Time for like $6, which it's like a $40 game, so.
It's a good deal.
Yeah. So yeah, I guess that's all we got for everybody this week. Make sure to check us out on Twitter. We're at LN Gamer Podcast. We're on iTunes. We're on SoundCloud. We're on Stitcher. We're gonna hopefully be having a website that you guys can go to coming soon.
This is our 20th episode.
20th
episode. I think that's a milestone. That's what, 5 months?
I think so, yeah.
Is that, no. Is that, I don't know if my math's right, yeah.
Five months?
Five goddamn months. Five goddamn
months. It's a long time, man.
It is a long time.
That's devotion.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
There were weeks where we were only talking to about maybe 3 listeners, so thank you for being more than 3 now.
Word.
So anyways, thank you everybody, thank you listeners, thank you Fiction315 and That Choffee, as always. Thank you Charles, thank you Steve, thank you Tim, I'm Nick.
Oh yeah.
This has been Late Night Gamer Podcast episode 20, and we are done for the night.
Good night.
Nick.
Late Night Gamers Podcast, where we make all of your gaming habits seem acceptable.
Late night gamers.
Steve.
This game sucks so bad, it's so unbalanced, blah, and then I just quit, never play it ever again.
Carlson.
What do you do in your free time? Sit around knitting? Screw that shit, I'm gonna cut up a dragon's head.
Tim.
It's okay if your guts spill out and you explode into a bloody mess, as long as you don't take your clothes off.
Gamers.
We are done for the night.
Bye now.
Good
night. Jesus Christ. That is the worst noise I've ever heard.
That's terrible.